Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 o'clock. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll talk about some of the birthdays that you can celebrate in February, some of the unusual holidays in February, and another edition of Would Esmeralda Buy That? It's also a Triple Play Thursday. That means you guys call in and text in your requests. One song, one artist, three songs. And that is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right. So we are now welcoming to the show for his biweekly visit. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every couple of weeks. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we love to talk TV. And we got a few texts from you guys for questions for Dan. And Dan joins us to talk TV. Welcome back, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well, Nick. How about you?
Not bad. Not bad at all. So, listen, let's talk a little bit first about, before we get into more of the, you know, the newer TV stuff and some reviews and things like that. I saw some of your tweets during the SAG Awards. In general, what did you think?
I liked it. I thought that it was a show of people who had things that they needed to get off their chests.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us feel like we do. And if you don't want actors talking about their opinions about things, maybe don't watch a union's annual Guild Award show. That, you know, there are places where people should maybe talk about politics and shouldn't maybe talk about politics, but a union award show for members of a guild, if you're not going to open up and talk about what you want to talk about, what's even the point? And there were some great speeches, there were some good winners. Yeah, I thought it was a very satisfying award show, as such things go. And plus, it was over in 2 hours and 15 minutes, and,
right,
and you gotta love that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I thought it was pretty great too. And so many of the speeches were so memorable. And obviously, you know, the Stranger Things, David Harbour's speech was the one that you know did the most. Between David Harbour's speech and, of course, you know, Winona Ryder's facial expressions, which hit the internet in record time, right, Dan?
Oh. They were instantly. Oh, and I tweeted within an eighth of a second of the reaction starting, and so that tweet about Winona Ryder's reactions got a lot of response. Like, I can't watch that speech and hear what David Harbour's even saying, and it's a great speech. It's an insanely passionate speech where, I mean, he's red-faced because it's just tearing its way out of him, and all I can do is stare at Winona Ryder. It's unreal, and I don't know if you've seen the meme going around with the pizza.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
That is a glorious.
It's beautiful.
20 seconds of high quality internet footage.
Yeah,
yeah.
The pizza one is great, and then the folks at Midnight did one too, with like a thought bubble of what she was thinking inside her head, and it's weird little animated things are happening, and that's a pretty good one too. But yeah, I mean, it hit. I mean, I was watching it, and I just was, you know, he's giving this incredible speech, and I just kept getting, like you just said, Dan, I just kept getting distracted by Winona Ryder. I was like, what is going on in there? What's happening?
And I still do not have the answer, but I think that the pizza explanation seemed very, very rational. I thought that seemed right on point. So I'm going to go with that as the solution. And regardless, she was, you know, look, if you're that close to a person who is as obviously inflamed and engorged with passion as he was, your best response really is to be demonstrably reactive to him, because because how can you not? I mean, he's waving his arms and he's within an inch of you. You know, you're running the risk of getting smacked every word out of his mouth. So of course you're going to respond,
right,
and probably you're going to respond outsized. But boy, oh boy, that was a moment. But
it was.
No, I thought it was a good show, and so many of the speeches, and you know, the fact that, for example, Denzel Washington had never won a SAG award. How is that possible?
Whoa, really?
He had never won an individual SAG Award. I don't think he won one as part of an ensemble either, but that was his first individual SAG Award. And so, you know, come on. How is that even possible?
Yeah, no, that's crazy. I didn't know that. I did not know that. That's crazy.
And he obviously didn't expect to win, because everyone expected it was going to be Casey Affleck. And honestly, you know, weeks after seeing those two movies, the performance that sticks with me more really is Denzel's performance in Fences. So I'm okay if it turns out that, except, I mean, you know, who needs three Oscars? But still in all, that's a great performance.
It is a great
and
performance.
It's not like Casey Affleck isn't great, but still in all, yeah, I can get behind Denzel if that's what people are going to want to do.
Yeah. Now, I assume that John Hurt died after they put the package together.
Yeah, and given that they included Mary Tyler Moore and they didn't get to John Hurt, I think it just came down to them saying, look, we have to lock film on this.
Yeah.
And we'll make sure that he's there next year because we're not going to, you know, we're not going to forget John Hurt. But I think that they didn't. They just had to stop at a certain point. And since, you know, people sadly leaving us day by day by day.
Right.
You gotta draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I was just, you know, I was hoping that they would get, you know, like, I understood why. Like, when the memoriam ended, I was like, okay, he died too late, you know, for them to put him in there. But it was still kind of, it was because it was so fresh in my mind that John Hurt died, like, the day before. So.
And because Mary Tyler Moore got in there, like, immediately, before you knew that Debbie and Carrie were going to end the reel. Because,
right.
of course, they were. And so once you went from Mary Tyler Moore, and you're like, ooh, well, they got that one in last second, and then they went straight to Debbie and Carrie. I was like, okay, I guess John Hurt just...
Exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly what went through my mind. Another thing that I brought away from the SAG Awards was how awesome is Lily Tomlin? I mean, come on.
She is fantastic, and we gave her the TCA Lifetime Achievement Award at our summer TCA Awards, and she gave a great, very, very similar speech, not in terms of anything she said, but just in terms of the fact that someone told her before she went up on stage, okay, you got between 5 and 10 minutes to do whatever you want. And so she took full advantage and just went her own way for 5 to 10 minutes. And yeah, she should be allowed to do that every couple award shows.
One of my favorite interviews that I've ever conducted was with her. She's just fantastic. It was just such a thrill to interview her. And she, you know, she was great. Now, here's the question, though. I mean, I'm assuming that they had something prepared for Dolly Parton and Jane Fonda. Because Dolly Parton just came out.
There had to be banter that was not entirely about Dolly Parton.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because she came out and did 5 minutes of boob jokes, and
I think that there was more back and forth about back when they worked together and all of that, and someone at a certain point said, okay, well, James 2-6, so Dolly, you got to do your thing, and Dolly's like, okay, I can do shtick.
Yeah.
I've done shtick before.
Yeah,
watch me.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I agree with you. I thought it was tight. The awards were tight, and you know, this obviously. It's a very passionate time here, you know, for these award shows. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what the speeches are like in February, at the end of February, considering how much damage can be done between now and February 26th. So,
oh, God. I mean, the sheer number of possibilities that range everywhere from the Oscars won't take place to everyone will boycott the Oscars to question mark. The possibilities are endless, and I guess that'll make it worth watching, except that unlike the SAG Awards, that show will not be a tight 2 hours and 10 minutes.
No.
Never ending.
Exactly right. In fact, you know, I annually I take the night off, like that Monday morning, and I always do because it's like I'm exhausted after watching it. It's like because I'll watch some of the, you know, the red carpet stuff. And, you know, and then, and you know, it ends close to midnight our time, and that's usually about the time we walk into work, and I always take that Monday morning off because it's just exhausting, just sitting on my couch watching it. It's like, come on.
And this is why you have to be on the coast, because they're done by, I don't know, they're done by 9-ish here, and at that point, then they immediately start re-airing the Oscars. They just loop right from the end of the telecast into a re-airing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a glorious thing, a little bit like the Super Bowl, which also doesn't go all night here. It just ends at a fully reasonable time on the West Coast.
Yeah. And now, speaking of the Super Bowl, and I got a text from a listener, where 630 area code. What is Dan hearing about the new 24? And you have in fact seen 24 Legacy. Tell us about it, because it debuts after the Super Bowl.
It does indeed. So I am not just hearing things about it. I have watched 3 episodes of it. I was ready to write a review a couple times, and Fox kept releasing in drips and drabs individual episodes, and finally I was like, okay, the 3 is going to do it. And naturally, after my review went up, Fox put up a 4th episode that I haven't gotten to. It's okay. It's 24-y, And if you have an appetite for 24, it'll fulfill a lot of that appetite, unless your appetite for 24 is entirely regulated by the amount of Jack Bauer you get, in which case it will not fulfill any of your desires for 24, and it'll be hugely disappointing.
Mm.
So
what's the setup here?
The setup is that a young former Ranger, Special Forces guy, Eric Carter, played by Corey Hawkins, who some people will recognize from Straight Outta Compton, or if you imagine him with not particularly convincing dreadlocks from The Walking Dead. And basically, as the premise begins, his team 6 months earlier took out a sheik in the Middle East as part of a terrorist, clear out. And now people are starting to wipe out members of that Ranger squad. They were supposed to be secret, but apparently the secret got out. How did the secret get out? Well, he has to get in touch with the former head of CTU, who's played by Miranda Otto. And Miranda Otto's character is the wife of a senator who's running for the presidency. And so the question is, why are people killing off members of this Ranger squad? And what is the bigger terrorist action that's at the end of the road on this? So it feels like a 24 setup, though apparently it was originally drafted as just a different pilot. You know, members of a Ranger squad are being wiped out, what is the secret they're holding? That was the premise of that show. But that, hey, we can turn this into 24, why the heck not? And it does feel very much like 24 for both good and bad. It has the tight pacing you expect of 24, and yet despite the tightness of the pacing, there are at least two subplots already in the three episodes I've seen that are just awful, and that's pretty much standard operating procedure for a season of 24. There are always major subplots, usually involving civilians doing really, really stupid things that are really annoying, and they're here in very bold strokes in their awfulness. And so the question just becomes, were you able to put up with those things because of how compelling Kiefer Sutherland and Jack Bauer were, or was there something else to it? And for people whose answer turns out to be, it was Jack Bauer, it was Kiefer Sutherland, this obviously isn't going to work. But if you can look and go, okay, this operates like 24, for the most part, and Corey Hawkins is really good. He's quite solid. He's not Kiefer Sutherland, but he's intense and believably action-y. And if you can put the Bauerness of it aside, I think it's entertaining enough, and you'll just have to deal with the stupid high school kids who are involved in a terrorist plot in some way. And while Corey Hawkins' character doesn't have a teenage daughter to get menaced by a mountain lion, he does have a wife who he, in order to protect her while he's doing other things, he puts her in the stupidest situation imaginable. And her subplot is atrocious. And it's tough. Yeah. It's tough in the bad moments, because the bad moments remind you, wait, 24 has almost always had these bad moments.
Yeah.
So, you know, that you know that no subplot on 24 is going to be there forever, so you hope it extricates itself from the bad stuff sooner than later.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned the mountain lion, because that's when I tuned out and never went back to 24.
Wow. that's early. I mean, it's not the instantly, but still, yeah. that is early in the
run. I know. Way early in the in the life of that show.
You missed a lot of good stuff. You also missed a lot of not as good stuff. So, yeah. But I think you missed enough good stuff that maybe you should feel a little bad about it.
Okay.
Not hugely bad. A little bad.
Now, is it going to be on Sundays, or is it going to be on?
No, it's the Monday night time slot is where Fox thinks people think 24 belongs. It's just getting the post-Super Bowl showcase.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So, you know, and it fits. Like, they don't premiere new shows after the Super Bowl all that often anymore, but this is the kind of thing where it's kind of half new but half not.
Yeah.
You might as well put it there.
Yeah, it makes sense. Okay, Dan, hang on, all right?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and he's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us biweekly here on the show to talk TV and more. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We got a break for the news. When we come back from the news, more with Dan. On 720 WGN. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 o'clock every weekday morning, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. 6 o'clock is the great Steve Cochran with your morning drive. And coming up in a little bit, Wood Esmeralda, buy that. Another edition of that. We'll be coming up on that. It's Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we'll talk about unusual holidays for the month of February, beginning of the month, and birthdays as well, and more. And let's get back to our conversation with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV, and we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
All right, you contributed to an IndieWire article, 12 TV shows to watch during times of political unrest. Tell me a little bit about that. Now, you mentioned One Day at a Time in it.
I feel like I'm always on these IndieWire articles giving five or six or seven different answers. I'm much wishy-washier than I probably wish I were. But yes, One Day at a Time was what I said was kind of comfort food, and comfort food in a time where I find that there are a lot of shows that I'm just not feeling inspired to watch in the same way that I was before, that I just can't get myself inspired to watch a mediocre episode of Homeland at this point. I can't bring myself to care when Designated Survivor is coming back. A lot of shows that are kind of mid-range, not all that great drama are seeming less engaging to me. They're seeming less necessary because there's enough mid-range, not particularly appealing drama that I can catch if I just want to turn on MSNBC or CNN. So yeah. I definitely find that the comedies are where I'm just feeling more comfortable these days. And, fortunately, there are a lot of really good comedies on TV. And the fact that, unfortunately, there are only the 10 episodes or 13 episodes of One Day at a Time, however many there are, that's a little bit limiting. But that's a show that I think people should be seeking out in these times, because it's nourishing and it's meaningful, but it's also funny and warm and comfortable. And those are a diverse assortment of things for it to be.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I love the reboot of One Day at a Time. In fact, Stephen Tobolowsky is going to be on the show tomorrow.
Excellent.
Yeah, well, and he's just hilarious on it and really good on it. I think I had watched like three episodes the last time we talked. Obviously, I've finished it since then. And I did not expect to cry during the last episode, but I did. And I didn't expect for it to have such a wonderful arc. And it's a Norman Lear show through and through. And Justina Mikado, she is such an anchor on that show. I mean, it's such a great performance. And I hope she gets recognized in some way. Do you think she will?
Oh, I wish I could say with certainty that she would.
Yeah.
But I can't say it surely. I can say it like, I think so, and I think that there will be some little groundswell for it, but it's going to be hard. It's not the kind of show that, unfortunately, you can guarantee that awards voters are going to watch.
Yeah. It's on Netflix, by the way, folks. It's 13 episodes. You need to watch it. It is really, really terrific. And it takes on, Dan, so many serious issues and does it in a natural way. It never seems forced, never seems heavy-handed. It's also very funny. Each episode, it says something about, there's racism, there's dealing with your sexuality, there is the treatment of veterans, there is alcoholism, pride in your ethnicity, racism, and it covers all of these things without being heavy-handed. It covers it in a way that the best Norman Lear stuff in the past has covered it, and it's anchored by a tremendous lead performance and supporting performances that are all flawless. It's also funny.
But only the 13 episodes, so you got to cherish those, because I don't even think it's been renewed yet for more. I assume eventually it will be, but
maybe
it hasn't been yet.
Maybe Steven will have a little info on that. We can ask him tomorrow.
Get the scoop.
Yeah, he's very funny on it, and he's Stephen Tobolowsky, and I really, really love what they did. I mean, I love everything about it. I thought it was just great, but I really love what they did with how they updated the Schneider character, and how they how they changed him from just nothing but machismo to this kind of really damaged guy that's seeking a family, you know? And I just thought that was an interesting thing. And he was also kind of the guy that would they would bounce lessons off of him because he misunderstood so much. And you know, I like what they did with the Schneider guy. I really do.
No, he starts off feeling a little bit like a stereotypical hipster, but by the end, he's not. But he's very open to learning. He's very open to being an important part of their lives, and he takes that seriously, even if he doesn't take a lot of other things seriously.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you that it is one of the top shows to watch, you know, at times of political unrest. If you just want to kind of get away from it, but not get away from it all because there are some serious things in it, and it is like comfort food. It feels just like you're watching a Norman Lear sitcom, which is what it is, and I just think it's great. So,
agreed.
All right, a show that I am really speaking of Netflix, since we're on the Netflix, a show that I am really looking forward to, and it'll be streaming starting tomorrow, is the Santa Clarita Diet, with Drew Barrymore and Timothy Olyphant, and I can't tell you how crazily excited I am about this. Because, well, there's zombies involved, and it's a comedy, and I'm just very excited. Please don't tell me I'm going to be disappointed.
Well, here's my first question. Would you be happier not knowing that there are zombies?
I don't know. I will tell you this. I mean, just, well, from the cast alone, I'm intrigued. So, I mean, but the zombie thing, that's always a draw for me.
And I understand that for many people it is, and I've just been pondering this. I was pondering it as I wrote my review. I pondered it in conversations with people on my Facebook page, just whether secrecy is an important part of this. Now, Netflix obviously doesn't think that secrecy is an important part of it.
No.
In the description, it says she eats human flesh.
Right.
So you got that. It's there. Nothing to be done about that.
Right.
And it's revealed very early in the show. Like within the first 15 minutes, that's what the show is, and there's nothing else to it. She becomes a zombie, and he's her husband, and he loves her, so they continue to live their lives together like that. But yes. So let's see. How do I want to tell you about this without crushing you, but without getting too inspired? Because I think it's a funny show.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a funny show where you can see the effort that's being put in. You know, some people, it's like some athletes, you know, they make it look easy. They glide, you know, everything looks like it comes naturally. And then some athletes, they're like grinders. You can tell at every point they're trying really hard. They're putting in maximum effort. This is a maximum effort show. This is a show that is making it look like it's trying hard. And sometimes it gets a little bit sweaty.
Okay.
Sometimes you go, okay, chill a little, relax, let the zombies come to you. Don't rush out to the zombies. But Drew Barrymore's having a lot of fun. She's being loopy and entertaining and a little bit sort of innocent, but also eating human flesh, and she's having fun with that. Timothy Olyphant is both miscast, but also steers the character into what he does well. So within 5 minutes, he's complaining about how unassertive he is and how he's a little bit too wimpy and non-confrontational about things. And you go, well, wait a second. Timothy Olyphant plays guys who are psychotic.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Right.
And so you go, this is bad casting. But then as he goes along, you see kind of how if he's been repressing certain things, it has him right on the edge of basically being manic, and that then becomes what Timothy Olyphant does well.
Mm.
So that all works well. It's really gross and really into the zombie stuff, so it's not just this is not a show that's ashamed to be about zombies. So if you're a little squeamish, and I know you're not, but
yeah,
some listeners might be.
Yep, true.
Just be cautious is all I'm saying, because it's comedy squeamishness, so that ought to make it okay, but you know, some people just aren't big fans of fluids, and so there are definitely fluids here and dismemberments and all things like that. I laughed a pretty fair amount, and I felt as it got to the end of the 10-episode first season as if it was settling in to kind of get the rhythms down, and there's a lot of stuff that still needs to be done after this season, so I'm looking forward to a second season. But don't get your thoughts
okay.
all that high, but
okay.
a little high.
Okay. All right. Friday is my plan is to watch a few of these episodes at least on Netflix. I'm looking forward to it.
You'll go through them really quick. They're 30-minute episodes.
Oh, they're only half. It's only half an hour. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's only a half an hour, and part of the trying really hard that they do is it does move very fast. I think you will find yourself going through these episodes very quickly. I would be shocked if you haven't made it through the season by the end of the weekend, if you have the time.
Yeah, no, I mean, if it's only 10 episodes, 30 minutes apiece, I could probably crack that out in a couple of days without question.
Yeah, it's very fast.
Okay.
And
right.
I think that's what it does best, honestly, is that it really just moves along, because if you got bogged down in anything too long in the series, you might get frustrated by certain parts of it, but it moves rat-a-tat-tat, and the supporting cast, there are a bunch of people who pop up for cameos who are fun, and a bunch of people have supporting roles who you've liked on other shows, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
They're fun. It's an entertaining enough show. It's just a little sweaty at times.
Gotcha. All right. That's the Santa Clarita Diet, which is debuting on Netflix on Friday morning. That would be at midnight then, right, on Friday?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So there you go. By the way, I just want a good question. Who's behind this creatively?
It's Victor Fresco, who created Better Off Ted, would be the credit that people might know and love him from. And and he has definite common rhythms here. He likes to make things that are absurd seem kind of deadpan and mundane, and certainly a romantic comedy about zombies would be a good opportunity to do that. And it's not necessarily something that you can feel him doing entirely instinctively, but you can also see him at all times trying to figure out how to get things into his comfort zone. So he created it and wrote a few of the episodes, and then it was directed by the guy who did Zombieland. So
how
to do this.
Oh.
And then there are a bunch of as you look at the individual episodes along the way, you'll notice that a lot of the directors are very familiar movie and TV comedy directors, and a lot of the writers are vaguely familiar as well.
Okay.
But the directors in particular, it's a strong directing slate that they have for this one.
That's great. Okay, Santa Clarita Diet, which debuts on Netflix Friday morning at midnight. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us, and we love to talk TV with Dan. And we've got to take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk more with Dan from The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we have a link on our Facebook page. And we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk more TV right after this. All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here, 720 WGN. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Right now, though, we're talking TV with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's get back to our TV conversation. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
We have a text from Susan who says to us, thank you for talking me through the first couple of episodes of The Good Place. I almost gave up early, but went with your enthusiasm, and the finale was a great payoff. Well, there you go. We did some good, Dan.
I feel like there are a lot of people who feel like we're doing a service to them, and I am happy to be a part of that service, and happy that the listener stuck with The Good Place, because I really thought that was a great first season of TV. Certainly great by network standards.
Me too.
Sure.
I agree with you 100%. I love the show. I love it, and I'm so glad it got picked up. I'm so glad.
I was not worried, but they could have certainly picked it up the day after the finale, and everyone would have been relieved then too. But I was pretty sure this was one that was going to be back. It had the right combination of star power, of creative talent, and it's been doing reasonably well in the ratings, and I think it's a show that people will pick up in various streaming platforms in the next few months, and I don't know, maybe it'll add some audience. I don't feel like shows really do that anymore, but I think the audience will still be happy for it when it comes back next year, provided they don't like delay it till next spring or something. That
right.
would be annoying.
How did you feel about the finale itself?
Oh, I thought the finale was great. I thought the finale was both surprising because I didn't see it coming, and then was completely satisfying because it immediately answered a lot of the problems that I'd had with the show. And I hadn't had like a lot of problems,
yeah,
but a lot of things that I didn't like. But why is dot, dot, dot? or what sense does dot, dot, dot make? They were answered by the finale. Suddenly, the things that I hadn't been fully connecting with made total sense. And yeah. and that's a well-orchestrated twist. And I've heard that if you go back and rewatch the show, it will, things hold up. Now, I don't have the time to do that, right. But I hear it's true.
Yeah. And I would love to go back and rewatch it. I just thought it was great. And one of the things that I really liked about it was as it went along, and we've talked about this before, Dan, as it went along, I mean, obviously you've got Kristen Bell and you've got, you know, Ted Danson, who's a national treasure, obviously. And, but it became about the ensemble. You know, lesser known actors that people don't know as well as Kristen Bell and Ted Danson. And they got to do a lot of great work, and it became an ensemble piece as well as just like the creativity, just in terms of like imagination and even special effects and stuff like that. It just kept getting better.
I think that it was a show that really did have its pieces in order from the very beginning. It knew where characters were going, and it knew which actors were going to be useful in which ways as it went along. And sometimes you can feel shows figuring out that out as it goes along. In this case, it felt like, I don't know, they knew who was going to be there and what they could do. So I thought there were just a lot of great supporting performances from, especially William Jackson Harper, who's also great in Patterson. He was terrific, and I think it is a surprisingly deep cast, because when it came out, everyone was like, oh, it's Kristen Bell and Ted Danson doing their thing, which is remained true until the very end. But it got to the point where you could put an episode on somebody else in the second half of the season, and they carried it perfectly.
Yep, I agree. Now it's I saw one of your tweets, and it's funny that you mentioned Patterson. And I totally agree with your tweet. You said, I wish Amazon had known what to do with Patterson. A screenplay and Adam Driver Oscar noms should have been in play, but never were. I totally agree with you. It was my second favorite film of the year, and I love it. And just the fact that nobody is seeing it and it didn't get any awards love is astonishing to me.
It is a Jim Jarmusch film, and that's gonna always limit it. And I think Amazon knows that it's the kind of thing where if they couldn't get a theatrical audience to watch it, it will live on in Amazon Prime and people will just find it. And I think that that's definitely true. But at Press Tour, we had a panel with the Good Place people. And I made sure after the panel, and when William Jackson Harper wasn't talking to anyone else, to go up and make sure I told him how much I loved Patterson. And he's like, oh, I'm glad you loved it. He said that they all thought they knew what it was going to be, but they didn't know what it was going to be until they actually saw it, and he was just relieved that people had been responding to it. So people will continue to, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I responded to it massively. I thought it was a gorgeous movie. So, all right, also we got a text here. 847 area code says, on Fox, there's another Chicago-based police show that's set to launch on February 6th called APB. Is it worth watching, Dan?
Finally, another procedural set in Chicago. Aren't you guys relieved to finally see your city depicted? Though maybe not so much in this case, because this one's point is that Chicago is a crime-ridden hellhole in desperate need of overhaul, basically. And
well, the feds are coming here, so...
unless they're going to Mexico or they're going to Australia or there's a limit to the number of places that our president is going to be able to send the feds, so I think you might need to wait. Think you might need to just accept that Hollywood cops are coming to save you. And
I will say this, I saw the commercials for this, and I'll end up watching it, because the one thing, and I agree with you, Dan, there's like 8 million procedurals that are here in Chicago, and what you've just said, that they make Chicago look like a hellhole, I'm not happy about that. But they're hiring a lot of my friends, so I'm okay with that. My friends are getting paid, so that's, you know.
And it's not awful, but it's not very good. It is situating itself in a situation which, as you guys all know, is not a good situation. It's a situation that's very real and very unfortunate in certain parts of your wonderful city, and it's making it into this kind of a little bit too light thing about a wealthy guy who gives the police department a lot of high-tech trinkets, and thus that's how you fight crime, because that's the problem with fighting crime in urban spaces. It's a little bit like if Bruce Wayne decided that he had a lot of money and there was a lot of crime in Gotham City, but he didn't really want to go through the trouble of working out so that he could fight the crime himself, but he just put a lot of money into Wayne Technologies so that they could help the police.
Oh, I
which
see.
Wouldn't be a bad thing for Bruce Wayne to do, of course. This would be a perfectly legitimate way for Bruce Wayne to spend his money. It just wouldn't be a successful comic book. So it's like if he didn't suit up and become Batman, but just said, here, Commissioner Gordon, take whatever resources you need to buy drones. And that was it.
Okay. And now, who's the lead in it?
It's Justin Kirk from Weeds.
Oh,
and
sure.
I think that he's great. I like Justin Kirk a lot. I don't know that he ever got the respect that he fully deserved for Weeds. I thought that was a great performance.
And I also thought he was phenomenal in Angels in America.
Absolutely. Yeah. And another performance where he could have gotten more awards attention, but there were bigger name people who had to get that. And I understand the,
well, when you have Al Pacino and Meryl Streep in the thing, you know, obviously.
But definitely the attention is going to go other places.
Right.
The attention is going to go to Jeffrey Wright. It's going to go to, that was just an amazing cast and just an amazing, miniseries.
It was
an amazing play. All of that.
Yeah.
But Justin Kirk was also amazing in it and could have gotten a little bit more love than he got.
Yeah.
But so he's the lead and he's fine. And I think if you know, the situation I just gave you with Bruce Wayne giving resources to Commissioner Gordon, I think that he's as a good a version of that sort of Bruce Wayne as you would want, I guess.
Okay.
It's just not all that interesting or original or exciting. The pilot's directed by Lynn Wiseman, so it's kind of dark and murky and a little bit hyper-stylized and not in a thrilling way, but in a, you know, it looks good kind of way.
Okay. And that's APB. It's on Fox, and it's Monday. It debuts on Monday. Okay. Dan Feinberg is with us. We got to take a break for the news, and we'll come back and talk some more with Dan right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We are here till 5 in the morning. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. And at 6, it's the great Steve Cochran with your morning drive. I'm here every morning till 5 a.m., 2 to 5 a.m., overnight dude. It's Thursday, Cripple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talking text as well. Another episode of Would Esmeralda Buy That is coming up. And more. We're hanging out with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're talking TV. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Hey, Dan.
Hello.
Hello. I'm just curious. Have you seen Powerless yet?
I have seen one episode of Powerless, the revised pilot. They did one pilot, and then they had a showrunner changeover, and they did another pilot, and that is the one that I've seen. And it's okay.
That
would be what I would say.
Okay, give everybody the plot and like who's in it.
Well, it's actually a little bit like the imaginary plot of APB that I just described, in the sense that it's about workers at a subsidiary of Wayne Technology who have become unable to innovate, and they live in a world in which superheroes and supervillains are constantly getting into fights in the world outside around them and constantly putting civilian lives in jeopardy. And so there's this division of Wayne Technologies that is supposed to be working to come up with ways to, I guess, minimize the damage or protect civilians. Basically, it's for ordinary humans who are getting caught in the blowback of superheroes battling. And so they mention the different superheroes in passing, though there are actual superheroes who fight out the window. The show's not really about them. It's about these kind of research and development people. And so the team includes Vanessa Hudgens, Danny Pudi from Community, Ron Funches, the very funny Ron Funches from Undateable.
I love him. He's hilarious.
He's lost around 150 pounds from Undateable. If you haven't seen him lately, you'll be shocked.
He's on At Midnight pretty regularly, so I've been tracking his weight loss.
It's extremely impressive, and all praise to him, because he remains completely and totally funny. He is just now much svelter, so good for him.
Yeah.
And then you have Alan Tudyk as basically a distant cousin of Bruce Wayne's, who's running this subsidiary and really would like to move to Gotham City, and thus far he can't. And the pilot basically spends a lot of time establishing the world. There aren't any big laughs in the pilot, but on the other hand, you find yourself feeling some warmth of the characters, and that's an important thing. And I think that with better plot lines in subsequent episodes, it could be a perfectly funny show. It has the participation of DC Comics, and DC Comics obviously feels a need to do something at least a little bit lighter, given how murky and dark and miserable all of their recent movie stuff has been, and even given how dark a lot of the stuff on the CW has become. Like The Flash, which used to be very light and funny, has become much more Sturm und Drang in the past couple seasons, and I don't know that I feel like I missed some of the levity that show once had, but this is going to be totally light, and it could be good. I will definitely watch it for a few episodes going forward. The pilot is not great, but the pilot is amiable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's on my DVR, and it's by the way, it debuts tonight, 7:30 Central on NBC. That's Powerless. And okay. I hope it turns out well. I like so many people involved in it, and I think the idea is kind of neat. So
I think it has potential. I think it just needs to settle into what it is and start doing sort of fresher episodic things. The pilot is not about that. The pilot is, okay, here are these characters, here's the world they inhabit. Now maybe things will happen in future episodes.
Okay. All right. Let's go to something that's not original and continues to be a trend. There's actually a TV series of Training Day to go along with all the other movies that are being turned into television series. I will say that I enjoy the hell out of everything that Bill Paxton does. So right there, that kind of intrigues me. But really, a TV series of Training Day? Have you seen it?
I have seen three somewhat random episodes of it. I've seen the premiere, I've seen the fourth episode, and I've seen the seventh episode, which is always the way that you want to put a serialized drama out there for critics.
That's so weird. Why would they do that? Why would CBS do that?
They would do it because those were the episodes that were finished. That would be a reason. They would do it because those were the episodes they thought were good. That would be another reason, though they aren't. So I don't know if I necessarily buy that. And I think part of the reason, honestly, is aimed directly at you. I think they might have sent out three episodes that were Bill Paxton heavy because he really is the selling point for the show.
Sure.
It's Bill Paxton chewing scenery and having fun. He's not really playing the Denzel Washington character from Training Day, but he's playing this show's equivalent of that. He's playing the bad cop who pushes the edge of the envelope and who moves right up to the edge, but really moves over the edge. And is he as bad as the people he's putting away? Oh, who knows? And then a relatively unknown actor, Justin Cornwell, plays, again, not really the Ethan Hawke role, but the equivalent here, because the things that happen in the movie, they're part of the narrative of this show, but only in the sense that it's something that people can point back to 15 years earlier as being something really bad that happened in the LAPD, but it's got nothing really to do with what's happening here. Mm. So, but yeah, it's not very good. It's in fact at times pretty bad. The writing is atrocious. The directing is it's directed by Danny Cannon, who did a lot of Gotham, a lot of CSI stuff. He's very good at giving pretty images, and there are lots of pretty shots of different parts of downtown and East LA, and there's definitely a good look to it, but it's not really the kind of look that Antoine Fuqua gave the movie. Definitely the darkness and the murkiness of what Denzel Washington brought to the movie, Bill Paxton's just not even trying to do that. He's just basically, he's being a guy who's a cowboy from a different era who maybe doesn't play by the rules that today's PC society expects people to play by, but he gets results, darn it, and stuff. And the supporting cast is not very good, but it's also possible that they're good in the episodes that I didn't see. It's not very good. I don't know if it's worse than what CBS tried doing last year with Training Day, with Rush Hour, rather, but it's close enough to being basically the exact same thing that they should probably not have bothered, frankly, with either one of them. Yeah. So,
okay, well, that's disappointing. I mean, I didn't have a lot of promise. It didn't hold a lot of promise for me when I saw the commercials for it or anything, except for the fact that I'm a huge Bill Paxton fan.
And I think that you could, if that's all you go into this for, I think you could get some fun out of this, and that's always the problem when an actor you love signs on to do a show like this, is either you follow them to this bad show because you want to support them and watch what they're doing, or else you miss out on seeing them on screen for a year or two.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
if you feel like you're really hungering for Bill Paxton, this is the best you're going to get. But if you can stand to go a little cold turkey, or maybe just to throw in Aliens or Near Dark in your DVD player when you're getting like a real Jones, I would recommend doing that instead of watching Trey.
Yeah, but I would also throw in Frailty. For sure.
For sure. I feel like they're slightly different versions of Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, I pretty much love him in everything. I mean, you know, I love him in Trespass. He's the best thing about Weird Science. You mentioned Aliens. Near Dark is one of the best movies ever. I just adore the guy. And so, yeah, I mean, I think I'll just go back and watch that stuff, Dan. I appreciate the honesty.
I think that's a better idea. This is not very good, and I don't think there's much chance or any chance at all, really, that it's going to be successful. Now watch it become a huge hit, and then we'll just be stuck in this for the next 15 years, and this, you'll have to watch it if you want to see Bill Paxton.
Before we let you go, I just wanted to mention that you know one of your tweets you tweeted out, Mary Tyler Moore is in the Pantheon. She's an Inner Circle TV Hall of Famer. If she's not on TV's Mount Rushmore, she's in the conversation. I couldn't agree with you more on that, Dan. What a huge loss.
There was a lot of great writing done about her, though, and you know, last week, and there were a lot of wonderful reminiscences and a lot of people passing around episodes and basically honoring such an important and beloved figure in equal measures, because she was beloved, and lots of people are beloved, and they don't, you know, we like them because we like who they were on TV, but they don't change the industry, and she changed the industry.
Yep.
She pushed the industry, and frankly, to some degree, she changed society, and that's just a lot of impact.
And
she was also beloved.
Yeah, two of the most important and iconic television shows in the history of the medium, and she was a major part of both of them. And like you said, behind the scenes, she changed the business. And when we were, you know, doing tributes to her last week and talking about her, I went out of my way to make sure that people would go out and rent Flirting with Disaster. I loved her so much in that movie, and she was so great in it. And a lot of people have not seen that movie, and so I sort of went out of my way. I mean, a lot of people have seen Ordinary People, but I really wanted to mention Flirting with Disaster because she was just phenomenal in that.
It's a great performance, and you know, everyone was pointing out great things that people should go and check out, and really. If it gets people to go and look and see Mary Tyler Moore Show now and to realize just how well that show still holds up, because it really holds up amazingly well.
It's on every night here on Antenna TV. And every time I turn it on, it's just like, boy, this show is as good as it was, you know, 40 years ago, 45 years ago. Amazing.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. Dan, always a pleasure, my friend. And
always,
he writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow Dan on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. Dan, thanks, man, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Till next time, man.
All right, take care. There you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody. Always fun to talk TV with him. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the month of February and weird holidays and birthdays and all that cool stuff. And coming up in a little bit, would Esmeralda buy that? Would Esmeralda buy that? All that and more here on 720 WGN.